Mark chapter 1 and the verse 21. And they went into Capernaum, and straightway on the Sabbath day he entered into the synagogue and taught. And they were astonished at his doctrine, for he taught them as one that had authority, and not as the scribes. And there was in their synagogue a man with an unclean spirit. And he cried out, saying, Let us alone. What have we to do with thee, thou Jesus of Nazareth? Art thou come to destroy us? I know thee who thou art, the Holy One of God. And Jesus rebuked him, saying, Hold thy peace, and come out of him. When the unclean spirit had torn him, and cried with a loud voice, he came out of him. And they were all amazed, insomuch that they questioned among themselves, saying, What thing is this? What new doctrine is this? For with authority commandeth he even the unclean spirits, and they do obey him. And immediately his fame spread abroad throughout all the region round about Galilee. And forthwith, when they were come out of the synagogue, they entered into the house of Simon and Andrew with James and John. But Simon's wife's mother lay sick of a fever, and anon they tell him of her. And he came and took her by the hand, and lifted her up, and immediately the fever left her, and she ministered unto them. And at even, when the sun did set, they brought unto him all that were diseased, and them that were possessed with devils, and all the city was gathered together at the door. And he healed many that were sick of divers diseases, and cast out many devils, and suffered not the devils to speak, because they knew him. We'll end our reading there, and trust in the Lord will add his blessing to the reading of his precious word. Last Lord's Day, I mentioned how the latter part of Mark chapter 1 details a very busy day in the ministry of our Lord. He went, as we've already indicated, to the synagogue in Capernaum, and there he taught the people. And then his authority was not only demonstrated in the teaching, but also how he cast the demon out of a man that was demon-possessed. After that meeting then, the Lord made his way to the home of Simon Peter. It's also referred to here as the home of Andrew, his brother. And there a great miracle took place where Peter's mother-in-law was healed. And then in the evening time, many great miracles took place at the door of Peter's home. In verse 33, all the city was gathered together at the door. And the door there is a reference to this home of Peter, to Peter's door. Now that morning, Peter's home must have been a sad home, because they discovered that his mother-in-law had taken on well, so much so that she felt unable to make her way to the synagogue for that time of worship. And when they returned, she had not improved. In fact, the very opposite was the case. Her condition had very seriously deteriorated, and she was exceptionally ill. But there was a great change that day, because the Lord entered into Peter's house. And when the Lord came into this house, what a great miracle then was to follow. And what a difference it does make when the Lord comes into your homes, or when the Lord comes among a fellowship of God's people. Christ's presence makes all the difference. Some suggest that this home of Peter became a focal point in Christ's ministry in Capernaum. For Peter was originally from Bethsaida, but evidently he had moved here, and the Lord may have made this very home his base, or at least from time to time his base for his ministry, because we have those words in verse 33, how the people came to the door. And then chapter 2 in the verse 1, again he entered into Capernaum after some days, and it was noised that he was in the house. And the way the Greek is constructed there would indicate that the house is the house that has already been referred to, and therefore it must be the house of Peter that has been referred to. And so the house then that the men carried their friend up onto the roof and broke, uncovered part of the roof, that was the house of Peter. And then in chapter 9, Mark chapter 9 and verse 33, he came to Capernaum, and being in the house, he asked them. And so again, it speaks of how they were in the house when the Lord had come to Capernaum, and the number of the disciples, they were all there. And so it does seem that Peter's house then became a focal point for the Lord's ministry. Now, thinking then of this miracle that took place, the healing of Peter's mother-in-law, this miracle is mentioned in the first three Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke. And in each of those accounts, different details are mentioned. And it's not that there's conflict between them, but rather they're all drawing out different details. But it's interesting how there is something that draws all of those accounts together. And that is how they bring the matter to a conclusion. And this is a matter then that they are all agreed on as far as they all insert this particular detail. And that is that at the end of verse 31, it says, "She ministered unto them." And so the three writers, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, they all mention how that after this miracle took place, that Peter's mother-in-law got up and she ministered to them, or she served them. And evidently, the "them" that is mentioned there, "she ministered unto them," is a reference to ministering unto Christ and unto those four disciples that are mentioned, Peter and Andrew, James and John. And there is then surely here a great lesson, that as the Lord dealt with this woman, that as the Lord performed this great miracle, that she was enabled to serve the Lord and serve the Lord's people. Now, all of the Lord's miracles are literally true. And so we believe that these accounts are an accurate account of the Lord's miraculous power. And yet, the miracles are also recorded that we might be taught something of the Lord himself. And the miracles then were part of the Lord's revelation of himself and of his work. So the miracles are literally true, but yet there are great spiritual lessons that were being taught and are being taught to us today through these particular miracles. And what can we learn from the miracle of Peter's mother-in-law being healed? Well, here is something that we can learn, that when the Lord saves sinners, he enables them to serve him. When the Lord saves sinners, he enables them to serve him. So I want us to look here this morning at a mother serving the Lord and his people. A mother serving the Lord and his people. I want to see, first of all, the exclusion from service to the Lord. The exclusion from service to the Lord. For when Peter and these other men, along with the Lord, had entered into the home, we might have expected this lady to be on her feet and using her hands to prepare a meal, to serve these men as they had come from the place of worship. But that was not so. She was not able to do that service, because if you look at verse 30, Simon's wife's mother lay sick of a fever, and anon they tell him of her. And so the reason why she wasn't ministering to them when they came immediately from the synagogue was because she wasn't able to do it. She was lying there, sick of a fever, and that fever meant that she was hindered from engaging in service. Now, when the Lord did heal her, if you look at verse 31, he came and took her by the hand. I want you to think about how this gospel is the gospel of Christ as a servant. And yet here the Lord, as he took this woman by the hand, he himself was not only a servant, but he then was enabling this woman to be a servant. For as he took her by the hand, she then was able to use her hands to minister to the Lord and his disciples. When the Lord came in initially, she could not lift her hand. Her hand lay there, a limp as it were by her side. Her hand was not able to do the thing that hands were ordained to do. She could not work. Because as we read there in verse 30, she lay sick of a fever. And this sickness then kept her reclined. And Matthew tells us in Matthew 8 verse 14 and that this fever had thrown her down or cast her down. She was laid. And the word laid that Matthew uses has that idea. She was thrown down or cast down. Luke says in Luke 4:38 that she was taken with a fever. And the word there has the idea that this fever gripped her. And as the fever gripped her, the fever controlled her. And so, had she even desired to serve, she couldn't do it. Because she was under the control of this fever. And therefore, the reason why she was excluded from serving the Lord initially was entirely because of the fever. The fever was the problem. And it was only when the Lord rebuked the fever and healed her of it that this lady was able to get up and serve. So what does the fever speak of? For as I've said, though this miracle is literally true, there are great spiritual lessons for us in it. So what does the fever speak of? The fever speaks of sin. It is sin that excludes man from service to God. And in this fever we have an accurate picture of sin and of the power of sin. As we see that woman lying upon the bed, helpless as it were, on account of the fever, we see an accurate portrayal of what sin does to the sinner and how sin precludes the sinner from serving the Lord. How can we take fever to speak of sin? Well, there was a burning that was inward, but it was demonstrated outwardly. And so when these men came in from the synagogue, they saw this woman with a fever, and they saw these outward symptoms. They could feel her skin, and it was fiery. And there was an outward manifestation. They could see the sweat that was pouring from her. Her bed was saturated. But while all these symptoms were outward, the problem was one that was actually inside. Now, this woman had an outward manifestation of fever because it was symptomatic of an inward and internal problem. And the word fever, it actually has the idea of burning with fever. Now, there was this inward burning, and it was outwardly manifested then in an outward burning. Now, as we think of this fever then, does it not accurately speak to us of sin? We think of sin, the symptoms of sin are manifest on the outside, but they are revealing an internal problem, the problem of the heart of man. Why does man sin? Man sins because he has a depraved heart. And that is the continual teaching of the Word of God. The sinful heart of man results in the sinful practices of man. And we'll see that over and over again through this Gospel of Mark. But if you turn with me to Mark chapter 7 and the verse 21. Mark chapter 7 and the verse 21. In verse 20 it says, "That which cometh out of a man, that defileth the man. For from within, out of the heart of man, out of the heart of men, proceed evil thoughts, adulteries, fornications, murders, thefts, covetousness, wickedness, deceit, lasciviousness, an evil eye, blasphemy, pride, foolishness. All these things come from within and defile the man." And so we think of murder, we think of theft, we think of pride. And every sin that we could name, it comes from within. And therefore it is just like a fever. A fever is an outward manifestation of an inward problem. Mark 7 and the verse 6, he answered and said unto them, well hath Esaias prophesied of you hypocrites, as it is written, this people honoureth me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. The problem was a problem with the heart. And dear unsaved one in the meeting this morning, do not deceive yourself. Your heart is no better than the heart of any other. Your heart is deceitful and desperately wicked, just as the heart of every individual that is born into this world is deceitful and desperately wicked. And therefore, your salvation will not be making outward amends. These men could have sponged this lady all day, and it would have done nothing for her. And so you could try and make an outward change, and you could spend the rest of your life doing it, but you'll be none the better, for the heart has not been dealt with. It's only the Lord that can deal with the heart. So this fever speaks of sin because there was a burning that was inward, but an outward manifestation. But this fever left her in a state of weakness, and she was unable to help herself. And so this lady had been sick of a fever while the others were gone to the synagogue, but she hadn't been able to go and get a physician for herself because of the severity of the fever that she had. As I've already pointed out, there was that word used of another writer that she was led. She was confined to the bed. Romans 5 and the verse 6, it says, for when we were yet without strength, in due time Christ died for the ungodly. And this woman was at a particular time of crisis. She could do nothing to bring about her own healing. She could do nothing to deliver herself. And yet she was delivered, because in her time when she was yet without strength, the Lord intervened. And sin then has that effect. Sin leaves a sinner with an inability to help himself, an inability to deliver himself from his own sin. And man left to his own end to bring about his own salvation, he cannot do it. But the wonderful news of the gospel is this: when man was without strength, Christ came. Christ died for the ungodly. And there are other symptoms of fever that remind us of sin. And fever is associated with restlessness, with convulsions. The sinner is in a natural state of unrest. Remember how Isaiah uses that illustration of the sinner being like a troubled sea. The fever is also associated with thirst. The sinner has great cravings, great longings after something, and yet not knowing how that inner thirst can be satisfied. We think even of how fever can have effects upon the mind. And so sin affects the understanding even of the sinner. Sin leaves the sinner to be and to live as a fool. But I want to think here of how this fever was destructive. For in the Gospel of Luke describes this fever as being a great fever. Remember, Luke was a doctor. And as Luke considered this fever then, he said that this was no routine fever. And this was not something that would pass by tomorrow. But this was a great fever. In other words, there was some raging infection within this woman's body. And unless that inward problem was dealt with, this woman was going to die. And this fever was one that was destructive. And again, does that not remind us of sin? Sin, when it is finished, bringeth forth death. Do you think, dear sinner, of that sin that rages within your heart? That sin ultimately will separate you eternally from a holy God. Unless that sin, that heart of yours, is dealt with by the Lord, even in this scene of time. And can you not see then, dear unsaved one, there is a picture of you in this particular scene. This woman, she was led. She was thrown down, cast down. She was one that was lying sick. The sickness kept her down. She was taken by this fever. And so then we see how the sinner is kept down, thrown down in the grip of sin. And Satan is determined that he will not let you go. And yet the wondrous message of the gospel is that Christ comes. And Christ is able to deliver. And Christ is able to set you free. And oh, that you would turn to Christ this very day. And that you would see that he is the answer for all of your need, that you might rest upon him. And there is then here a great application for the sinner. But surely there is a great lesson here for the people of God as well. Here was a God-fearing home, the home of Peter. And yet a great hindrance had come into this home, the hindrance of fever. And where there had been, or where there ought to have been, service, there was great hindrance to that service. And as we examine our own homes, hindrances can come in, even to the home of the Christian. Sin can creep in. And as sin creeps in, some wicked thought, some malice, some concealed sin perhaps, it brings a hindrance to the service of the Lord's name. We cannot effectively serve God and hold on to sin at the same time. You cannot brush sin, as it were, under the carpet and say at the same time that this is still a God-fearing home. It cannot be so. Matthew Henry said, if Satan has half, he will have all. If the Lord has but half, he will have none. If Satan has half, he will have all. If the Lord has but half, he will have none. You cannot serve the Lord and the devil at the same time. And may the Lord be pleased then in all of our homes to expose the fever, to expose the sin, and that it might be dealt with, that sin might be expelled, and that we might be enabled to serve the Lord afresh. There was the exclusion from service to God. But I want to see then, secondly, the enablement for service to God. It took a miracle. It took something remarkable for this woman to be raised up that she might serve. And the power of Christ then is set forth in this particular portion that is set before us. Now, as I've said, each of the three evangelists, Matthew, Mark and Luke, they emphasize different details. And taken together then, the three accounts give us a full picture of what the Lord did as he dealt with this woman and raised her up. And it really reveals to us the Lord's ability to heal. Luke records for us how the Lord stood over the woman. So when the Lord came in, the Lord stood over her. You think of how this woman, she could not stand. And yet, the fact that she was unable to stand did not bring any limitation upon the Lord. The Lord stood over her. And surely we see there the Lord's grace. And that the Lord graciously came, and he came right to where this woman was. He came to help her. Then Matthew tells us that the Lord saw the woman. So the Lord stood over her, and the Lord then looked upon her. The Lord scrutinized her. The Lord saw her. He examined her. And the Lord demonstrated his compassion in that. For when the Lord saw the woman, he didn't turn away. But he continued to stand over her. There was the stand of the Lord, the scrutiny of the Lord. Then the speech of Christ. For Luke said that Jesus rebuked the fever. The Lord spoke. Then there was the stroke of Christ where the Lord touched her hand. Matthew tells us that. But then we read here of Mark, of the strength of Christ. In verse 31, he came and took her by the hand and lifted her up. And so the Lord just didn't touch her hand, but the Lord took her by the hand and lifted her up. And the Lord was revealing his strength in this particular detail. And surely in all of these things then taken together, we have a wonderful demonstration, a wonderful picture of the gospel. The Lord comes to the sinner. And the Lord, as it were, stands over the sinner. The Lord looks at the sinner, and while the Lord sees the ugliness of sin, the Lord looks lovingly upon that sinner in compassion. He speaks to the sinner. He touches the sinner. And then he lifts them up out of their condemnation. And that day, the fever could not stay, because the Lord had come. The Lord had looked. The Lord had spoken. The Lord had touched. The Lord had lifted. And Peter's mother-in-law became so conscious of the Lord's power, he came to her. She suddenly was aware of his presence. He bent over her. She saw the Lord's face. He spoke to her. She heard his voice. He touched her. She felt the Lord's touch. And he lifted her. She felt his power. And oh, dear sinner in the meeting this morning, that is our great longing for you. That if you have never heard the Lord before, that you'll hear him this day. That if you have never felt the Lord dealing with your heart, that you'll feel him dealing with you. That this very day the Lord will take you and lift you out of your sin. And this woman could only serve when the Lord did that wonderful thing within her. And oh, today that the Lord would do that wonderful thing within you. The book of Hebrews in chapter 11, the verse 6, says, without faith it is impossible to please God. Without faith it is impossible to please God. And today you cannot please God. Today you cannot serve God in your lost state. There must be faith. You must come and depend upon Christ. And we think of how he came to this woman. How does he come to the sinner today? He comes on the basis of his cross work. You think of how he came and he stood over her. And yet the sin is naturally at enmity with God. God is naturally cut off, but God is unable to draw near, and man is able to draw to God through that work of Calvary. And we think of how sin turns God's face away. By the cross, the sinner is enabled to look to the Lord. And more importantly, the Lord is enabled to look upon the sinner. As sin cuts man off from God, the ears of man are closed, and yet, by the work of the cross, the Lord is able to open those ears. The Lord is able to lift the sinner out of the mire of sin. And oh, today that you would see that the answer for your soul is Christ and the cross condemned in your place. As we think of multitudes around us that are not fulfilling the purpose that God has created man for, men generally are not serving God. They serve themselves. The answer is this, that the Lord would come, that the Lord would speak to them, that the Lord would lift them up, and oh, that we would see this being replicated over and over, even in this neighborhood, and that we would see the Lord delivering precious souls. We see the exclusion from service to God, the enablement for service to God, and I want to see finally then the evidence in service for God. If we're in Mark 1, verse 31, at the end of the verse, it says, she ministered unto them. And what she did, we're not specifically told. I presume that she served a meal. But whatever she did was certainly an evidence that the fever was gone. And remember how she wasn't able to use her hand. And now she was up, she was using her hands to minister. Her hand was put to work. We can say that in these words, she ministered unto them that her healing was real. Her healing was real. She was no longer held to the bed. She was no longer helpless. She was helping. She was no longer moaning. She was rejoicing. She was a new person, a new creation, as it were. And the change that had taken place on the inside was being manifested externally. Her healing was real. But I want to notice here also that her healing was immediate and complete. For if you look at that verse 31 carefully, it says, immediately the fever left her, and she ministered on to them. And the word immediately carries on. She, and immediately the fever left her, and immediately she ministered. Now you think of someone that has been ill, someone that has had perhaps some internal infection. They might be delivered from that infection. They are made well. But there follows then a period of recovery. That as the body has been sick, there is a period of days or maybe even weeks, for some maybe even months, as the body gradually is being built up again and they are being restored to their previous state of health. The remarkable thing about this miracle was this. Now, the Lord not only healed her, but he delivered her even from that recovery period. She didn't need it, because the Lord not only healed her, but he restored her body entirely. The fever was not only gone, but she was raised up to that full measure of health and strength again. Her healing was immediate and complete. And therefore, she didn't need to lie in bed for the next few days. She was able to get up that very day and minister. And surely there's a great lesson for that in the for the new convert. You think of one that has been held in the grip of sin, and the Lord delivers them, and they are to be serving the Lord immediately. Immediately they are to be engaged in the Lord's service. Immediately they are to be speaking in the Lord's name. I understand, of course, that someone that is newly converted, there are various things that they will not be able to do yet. And so someone that's just been converted, we wouldn't bring them into the pulpit to preach. That might come at a later stage. But while there are various things that they may not be able to do yet, there is much that they are able to do. They are able to speak of what they know, that they were a sinner that was condemned, but now they've been set free. They were a sinner that was destined for a lost eternity, but now they have been turned around to glory. And what we can say was that this woman did what she was able to do. She did what she was able to do. She arose and she ministered. She maybe didn't do everything that others were able to do, but she did what she was able to do. And may the Lord enable us to follow that example, to do what the Lord enables us to do. And the words here, she ministered unto them, the sense is not just that she ministered that afternoon and that was the end of the story. But the actual grammar of the construction there, ministered unto them, is that she continued to minister. And from this day forward, she continued to seek to meet a need. She continued to serve the Lord and his servants. Ecclesiastes 9 verse 10, we have those beautiful words. Whatsoever thy hand findeth to do, do it with all thy might. And there is much that needs to be done. Whatsoever thy hand findeth to do, do it with all thy might. May the Lord indeed enable us to be those servants that are engaged in the service of the Lord.